This podcast is brought to you by Western Reformed Seminary, the Reformed Seminary of the Great Pacific Northwest. Hear more at the conclusion of today's program. Welcome to Mortification of Spin, a casual conversation about things that count, with Carl Truman and Todd Pruitt. Mortification of Spin is a weekly podcast from the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. Let's join this week's conversation.
Welcome to Mortification of Spin. My name's Carl Truman. I'm Professor of Biblical and Religious Studies at Grove City College in Western Pennsylvania and an ordained minister in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. Here, as always, with my friend and straight man, Todd Pruitt, teaching elder, as the phrase has it, in the PCA, the Presbyterian Church in America, at the congregation that meets as Covenant Presbyterian Church in Harrisonburg in beautiful Virginia. Good to be with you, Todd.
Well, it's always good to hang out, Carl, and to be reminded of the privilege it is to sit beside an Amazon best-selling
It is.
Author.
It's true. I always feel that you've improved a bit when we part. A little bit of me is rubbed off.
It's true. I always, when I'm driving away from these meetings, I think I'm a better man now.
You probably are. You probably are.
It's true.
Anyway, we have a special guest today. I'm going to give a little anecdote about this guest before we introduce her. Some years ago, I was speaking at a conference, and the husband of this guest and myself had become known at this conference for wearing brightly colored trousers, or pants, as you Americans ambiguously refer to them. And somebody ran a Facebook competition on which of us was wearing the most cheerful and brightly colored pants. And I lost by one vote. And I found out that I lost by one vote because this man had recruited his own wife to vote for him. That's the kind of man I'm dealing with here. And if I can name and shame him, Neil Stewart of the Associated Reformed Presbyterian Church. Well, we're delighted to have today his wife, Catherine Stewart. For years, Neil has been saying he was going to introduce me to her and always found some weak excuse why she never turned up. But leading myself and David Hall actually to doubt her existence. But I've seen her on the screen today. She really exists.
She exists.
Neil Stewart really does have a wife called Catherine. And Catherine, it is a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you, Carl and Todd. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
And we want to talk to you today about a great new book, Surviving the Fishbowl, Letters to Pastors' Kids, which you've edited. Foreword by a mutual friend of Todd and myself, David Strain, contains an essay by one Katrina Truman.
Yeah, it really does. I was moved to tears as I read Katrina's words.
Makes that worth the price of the book,
it does.
I think.
Well, for me, especially reading Katrina's chapter, I thought, you know, given the fact that she had to overcome all of Carl's deficiencies in raising children, I found her chapter, because of that, particularly poignant. So
and she's particularly ticked off that we get joint billing. It's Carl and Katrina when she actually wrote it, and I simply edited it. So, but Catherine, it's a great volume. It's an interesting volume. It's a companion to an earlier one you did, Letters to Pastors' Wives. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just tell us, you know, what gave you the idea to do this this book?
Well, that's an interesting question, Carl. So essentially, let me see about. It would have been over 10 years ago now. I remember picking up a book by Tom Askell. I believe it was entitled, it's a Letters to Timothy, I think it's called. And I read it and I was really struck by the fact, I mean, it's a wonderful book. And it's a compilation of letters, really, to a young man upon him embarking upon a life of ministry with wise counsel from more seasoned men in the ministry. And so, essentially, after reading that, I remember thinking, you know, we pastors' wives really need something just like that. Because while we're while we are the other wing of the same bird, there are different things that we face as pastors' wives every day. And so I embarked upon the project of trying to format a book like that for pastors' wives. And the Lord was very merciful. I was able to gather some fantastic women who were willing really willing to put pen to paper, you know, express their thoughts and share their wisdom. And the book came together very well. And after that, somebody said to me, I thought I was going to put my pen down after that. I thought that was just a, you know, a one-shot book. But somebody suggested that I actually embark upon one for pastor's children, because in reality, they face very different situations on a daily basis to the ones that even we as pastors' wives and pastors face. So that's really where it all came from. Mm-hmm.
I was really appreciative of the book. I mean, obviously, all three of my kids are pastors' kids. I thought that was a profound mm-hmm. point I observed. Yeah, mm-hmm. But I was very touched by the book, because my kids, they're young adults now. Our youngest child is 20. He just turned 21. And I had some very nostalgic moments as I was reading through this, and mm-hmm. and also just some, a number of times where I was given some insight to think about certain things that they probably face that I hadn't thought of before. And I'd always kind of thought I'd thought through this a lot. And then as I was reading through these chapters, I had several moments where on the one sense, some compassion in certain areas mm-hmm. where I hadn't thought of before, just becoming more aware perhaps of some of the challenges. And I've talked with my kids a lot over the years about what it's like to be a pastor's kid. And of course, our daughter, being a girl, is more intuitive and more verbal on those things. And she and I have had occasion to have some really good conversations on that subject. And even my boys, who are less verbal, nevertheless, I used to press them on, is it hard for you, for your dad to be your pastor? Is it hard for you? I would always ask them specifically, is it hard for you to hear me preach? You know, knowing me, you know, much more than the typical church member does, seeing me at home, you know, my kids have seen me at my, you know, at my worst, my kids have seen that. And I used to ask them routinely, you know, how's it going? How are you receiving, you know, preaching from me? And those always led to really good conversations. But imagine, you know, I would just encourage church members to think about, you know, it could be a challenge to sit under your dad's preaching. Because, you know, a pastor doesn't have to be some sort of sinful hypocrite to still make it challenging for his children to sit under his preaching. I mean, that can be awkward perhaps at times. But one of the things that I thought of as I was reading through the chapters, first of all, I love the format of identifying kind of the special joys, because that's one of the things oftentimes I think maybe that we miss, because it's clearly, you know, we want to talk about the challenges because we know that those are real, but sometimes we neglect talking about the fact that there are some joys to be had. And even my kids to this day would say that there were certain things that they really liked about being a pastor's kid, even though they saw some hard things, there were things that gave them joy. And even now, my kids who are adult kids, my two boys live in town and, you know, listen to my preaching. And they don't have to. And that, first of all, that's been kind of encouraging, but they would say, and this surprised me the first time my boys told me this, that they liked listening to my preaching. And I thought, you know, that's a grace of the Lord. And what would you say in terms of, as you were receiving and editing these contributions, what were some of the common themes you heard in terms of, here are some of the joys, here are some of the pleasures that are attached to being raised in a pastor's home?
Right. And I think that's something, it's very easy with pastor's kids to major on the negative. Yeah. And in reality, it's a life just steeped in immense blessing. I mean, they are essentially raised at the hands of the most godly man in the church, theoretically.
Theoretically.
Theoretically, that's true. Their daddy is the one who delivers God's word week in and week out, and they get to have the privilege of living with the pastor. But of course, that is a double-edged sword. Like you said, they get to hear daddy discouraged. They are exposed to him being criticized, and I mean, they also see him sin. And as you well know, sometimes our sins as PK parents are one bit pretty. But there's also the other aspect of it. They get to see the church at its best.
Right.
in one sense, we are the first family of the church. And that just seems to automatically entail in people's hearts much affection towards the pastor's family. They want to pour into their lives. They want to love them. They want to, you know, envelop them as one of their own. And I mean, they're just from a personal perspective, we have just watched the church pour into our family. I remember one person who gave our oldest child their first car. I mean, that doesn't typically happen just any old member of the church. There's one dear lady who, when she picks up an extra night shift and nursing, she will donate a portion of that to one of our children every time. I mean, I think for our younger children, what stands out the most is that no matter where we've been, we have grandparents in the church. So probably like Carl, you know, grandparents are 4,000 miles away. And daily interaction and feeding into the children's lives isn't possible. And so even here in this church, we've only been here 5 years, but in this church, I mean, we have grandparents here who take our children out to the science museum. You know, they will have them come for sleepovers at night and those kinds of things. And I do appreciate that every child views life in the ministry through different lenses. Some children, like adults, are born naturally optimistic, and some are born naturally pessimistic, the kind of cup half empty, cup half full concept. But I love the way that in this book that Joel and Mary Beattie deal with it. Their chapter is entitled Count Your Blessings, Enjoying the Benefits of Being a PK. And the way they embark upon the adventure of ministry life is just unsurpassed. They deal with, you know, the multiple aspects of the privileges, you know, the witnessing of all the babies being born, all the weddings. You know, they see church growth. You know, they see building projects. They get the option of going on missionary trips. I think, again, from a personal perspective, hospitality has been a wonderful privilege for our children. And I think for most pastors' kids, countless numbers of well-known preachers and speakers, you know, come into the pastor's home. So they get the joy again of not just hearing them in the pulpit, but actually interacting with them one-on-one. You know, they array your dinner table. And that's not to even mention the privilege of hospitality within the church. And I accept that some PKs are natural born introverts, but I would say at least with the majority of ours, we've got extroverts, and they just relish the every Sunday whenever, you know, we have a family over to eat with us. If there's, you know, a hustling, bustling house, a never-ending stream of company coming through. I just don't think that's ever to be underestimated. And I think that, you know, they have a great privilege in all of that.
We've served at Covenant Presbyterian now for 8 years, and it's been a real blessing for us. And prior to that, we were we served at a church for almost 5 years, and it was a very, very hard experience, very difficult experience. And our kids were at very, very impressionable ages at that time, and they saw, you know, they saw me get beat up a lot, and to the extent where, I mean, it was an extremely challenging environment. We'll just say that. And one of the things I worried about was just their own souls and how they were processing seeing so much negative stuff out of the church. And one of the things I realized is they came through all of that without any hatred for the church at all. And I remember I was asked not long ago about that, about, you know, How did your kids do? How did they process seeing you get, you know, beat up so much and without having hard feelings towards the church? And the best answer I've come up with is, well, other than that experience, they've been in churches that have loved us really well. And so they know that there are really wonderful, godly churches that love them and have loved their parents well. And by God's grace, they were able to navigate that and to not define their feelings towards the Church of Jesus, because there was one place where it was just particularly difficult. And that's where, as a pastor, I'm so thankful for the churches I've served, where my kids have been able to observe that church, love their pastor, love their dad well, because to this day, my kids have a positive view towards the church, because they've seen so many instances where the church has been good to their dad and their mom. And that's a real blessing that they've gotten to see that.
You know, that's really interesting. Neil has this funny turn of phrase. seeing the inner workings of the sausage factory tends to make people think twice before they eat sausage in the future. And I think that I know from much of our lives, our one of our dominant prayers has always been, Lord, help our children to view the negative things through the eyes of the gospel. And I think that, you know, despite the fact that they see us sin every day, I think helping them process, you know, the sin that they view in the church, and remembering that, you know, they're not above the, those people, that they are, they're parallel sinners with those fellow church members, and that they are just as prone to sin as them. It's really important that our children don't become self-righteous in the way that they view the church.
Indeed. Yeah.
I think it's also important that the children don't think of the church as more perfect than it is as well.
Right.
I mean, I appreciate the difficulty of helping them process the sin that they see. But I always felt with our kids, it was actually helpful to them to realize that there are some real problems in the church and in Christian organizations. And so that they're not too disappointed when they realize, it's a little bit like growing up and you, that day when you realize that your dad is not perfect, you know, it can be a tough day. And I think it's useful for kids to know that there isn't a perfect church here on earth. Do you have any advice, Catherine, on, you know, how much you should expose kids to, how much you should help them process, how much you should excuse, how much, you know, how have you talked to your kids about the darker aspects of being involved in church and in Christian organizations?
Yeah, that's very interesting. So, I mean, first and foremost, that always, Neil and I have always said, listen to your children. They, you know, don't blow off sin, like you say, Carl, and don't minimize their burden. You know, don't explain away the sin of the church, and help them to see it through the lens of the gospel. To be honest with you, I think there are times when we have failed miserably at that. But what I have found most helpful is when you just get on your knees with your kids in prayer and just you know, declare your own helplessness before the Lord, and plead with Christ to have mercy and to help, you know, your children to see that there's more going on than what meets the eye, that this is Satan at work trying to destroy the church, and that we essentially mustn't be vulnerable to Satan's ploys.
Yeah, that's good. Wonder, as you think about what are ways that a church can encourage their pastor's kid? I know one of the things that is true, and it seems to be unavoidable. If you're a pastor's kid, and you know you have it in the title of the book, Surviving the Fishbowl, I just don't think there's any way to avoid the fact that people will typically pay a little bit more attention, well, or at least watch a little bit more the pastor's kids. I think it's unavoidable. And I would say because of that principle that people are watching the pastor's kids more closely, the church needs to be sensitive to try to encourage that those kids. Because I think to have an expectation where the pastor's kids aren't going to be watched anymore or noticed, I think that's unrealistic. And so I think churches need to be intentional on how can we encourage those kids? Because if we're not careful, when you're a child and you know, and you start to learn that you're actually being watched and evaluated, that can play some pretty heavy tricks on your own heart, particularly the heart of a child who can be insecure much more naturally. And so I think the church recognizing that, first of all, they need to recognize that, but secondly, you know, how can a church be careful and mindful to love well and to encourage well their pastor's children?
Right. Yeah. Right. I often think that, you know, when the congregation put the pastor's kid on a pedestal, the only way is down. And I mean, and we've been there, you know, and that's very, very hard. I think something that we have found immensely helpful is when members of the congregation don't adopt the attitude, well, you know, they're the pastor's kid, so they, you know, they have the godliest man in the church leading up their lives. I think what has been extremely helpful for us is when people have actually intentionally leaned in with our children, discipled them, taken them under their wing and shared their own personal wisdom and personal life experiences with them, and just cultivated a meaningful friendship with them. And I mean that in a multi-generational sense. I don't mean just peers or, you know, mentors, but literally across the spectrum. I think one of the hardest things for our children in the church is the expectations that are put on them. You know, it's very hard for our pastors because they often feel like they've got to be friends with every newcomer that comes into the church, and oftentimes end up with not being friends with anybody.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if the whole congregation can treat the pastor, his wife and children just in the way that you would like another church to treat your son or daughter and your grandsons, if they were pastor, I think that would be helpful. And especially for older married couples, if they can just love pastor's children like their own grandchildren, you know, they will thrive. You catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
You know, there's, I can think of several people in our church where we serve that are, everybody in our church is kind to our kids, but I can think of several people who have been especially just really sensitive to them. And I think of one lady in our church who is almost as old to be their grandmother, almost. And, you know, each Sunday she comes up to my sons. One is 24, one is 21. And she just wraps her arms around their necks and tells them she loves them and is praying for them. And my boys really appreciate that. They feel very affirmed by that. They know that every Sunday they're going to get a hug from this really kind woman. Another thing that we've seen at our church is one of the pastors that I serve with, my younger son, who's 21, every once in a while he'll call him and he'll come by our house and just take Matthew out for a walk, just to talk to him. And Matthew's very verbal. And so this pastor, he can take Matthew for a walk through our neighborhood and Matthew opens up to him and just talks to him. And, you know, it's just one of my coworkers, one of my fellow pastors at the church who I think out of a sincere desire to be a blessing to a pastor's kid, ministers to my youngest son that way. And then my middle son, one of the other pastors I serve with, just every once in a while takes him out to lunch, just to see how he's doing, talks to him about, you know, young adulthood and being a man and those kinds of things. And as a result of that, my boys have an extremely positive attitude about our church and about the men that I serve with. Like, I don't have to convince them that the pastors in our church are godly men because they know them.
Right. That's right. It's funny. Exactly the same thing happened today here. One of our staff members just called up our son Benjamin and said, "Hey, buddy, you know, can we go for lunch tomorrow?"
That's great.
And you know, I was on a road trip last weekend with our oldest son, and I asked him, you know, just in light of speaking today, I asked him, you know, "So, buddy, like, you have to really sum it all up." I said, "What's it like being a pastor's kid?" And he said, "You know, it's actually pretty great." He said, "There are the rough patches," he said, "but you know, you get special opportunities that other people don't get."
Yeah.
He said, "You know, you get the opportunity to meet people that you would never otherwise meet."
Right.
And he said, "You know, we are very blessed." And I realize that not everybody is in that situation, but when people are genuinely and sincerely interested in the pastor's kid, it goes a long way.
Yes, it does. And I would just encourage folks, make that investment, because a pastor's kid is generally aware that he or she is being watched, that he or she is in a fishbowl, and that can cause a lot of insecurity in the heart of a kid. And just seek to find ways to affirm them in that way. And it'll go a long way in helping that kid really have a positive attitude about the body of Christ. Yeah.
For sure.
Just we're sort of drawing to a close, Catherine, but I wonder, is there something that, as you read these essays, were the things or a thing that you wished you had known as a mother of pastor's kids many years ago? Was there something that stood out and said, "Well, if I'd known that, life would have been so much easier, or I wouldn't have made that mistake"?
Yeah, you know, there was one thing, and it actually struck me. Amanda Martin wrote the chapter on loneliness.
Yes.
It's subtitled Friendship in Solitary Seasons. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, some kids are naturally, you know, pessimistic, some are optimistic. Well, some are naturally introverts and some are naturally extroverts. And I think that loneliness is something that I have not fully weighed up. You know, whenever you have a child who's an introvert, loneliness can be a very, very influential factor in their lives and how they perceive ministry life. And if I had to go back again, I would really weigh that up in terms of how I helped our children to navigate that fishbowl. And
that's really good insight. And I loved that chapter because the pastor's kid can be lonely. And I would encourage our listeners to get a hold of this wonderful little book. It's published by Reformation Heritage Books, one of our favorite publishing houses. A collection of letters to pastors' kids surviving the fishbowl. It's edited by our guest, Catherine Stewart, who is a mother of pastors' kids. And she's given us a real gift in these collections. There were moments where I was just deeply moved by some of these chapters as I thought about my own kids, both some of the struggles they've faced because of the calling that God's placed on my life, but some of the unique joys that they would certainly affirm. And I was helped. And I know that I'm actually getting ready to put my copy in the mail to my daughter, who is, in her mid-20s and lives in the Washington, D.C. area, because I know she's going to read some of these and be touched by them just as she thinks about her own experience. And so, Catherine, thank you for being on with us. Thank you for having the idea of the book and doing the work to put it together. It was a real blessing to read through.
Wow, it's a joy to be with you both. Thank you very much indeed for having me.
Absolutely. And we would encourage our listeners to go to our website, mortificationofspin.org, where you can enter to win a copy of Surviving the Fishbowl, Letters to a Pastor's Kids. And I think Carl might have alluded to it earlier. You know, even for those of you who are not pastors, you would benefit from this book, not only to know just how to minister to your pastor's kids, but also if you're raising Christian kids in the church, there are points of connection that you will have with these letters that you'll very much identify with just by being someone who's raising children in the church as well. You'll be able to identify with some of these things. And I think you'll find them quite helpful, but go to our website, register to win a copy of this wonderful little book. And while you're there, the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals is donor supported. And if you're so moved, you can make a donation to the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. And I know that would be greatly appreciated. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. And we look forward to being with you next time on the Mortification of Spin.
Thanks for listening to Mortification of Spin, a podcast of the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. For more on topics like this, visit mortificationofspin.org, where you can find other articles by Carl and Todd, browse the archive of past episodes, and make a donation. We'll talk to you next time on Mortification of Spin.
I met your husband, well, at the worship conference, I guess, 2 years ago or so.
That would have been the last one.
But really appreciated him and have loved his preaching.
I love his hand gestures. It's the hand gestures.
He's good.
I don't want to stand within 4 feet of him. Well, I'm going to get a black eye.
Well, this is what Neil understands. This is what Neil understands. When you're preaching at Midway Presbyterian against that massive wall of wood paneling, you know, you disappear against it unless you actually move around a little bit.
When he was being installed in this church that we're now in, Derek Thomas, he warned the folks that they were getting the most charismatic Presbyterian pastor that he knew. So I think you're probably not far off the mark.
Western Reformed Seminary is a Bible-believing Presbyterian seminary in the Great Pacific Northwest. Their mission is to prepare church leaders who are spiritually grounded, knowledgeable, capable, and dedicated through solid theological training. Academic degrees such as Masters of Biblical or Theological Studies, as well as the Masters of Christian Ministry, with emphasis in biblical counseling, missions, or church ministry. Along with degree programs, students may take a class as a standalone for credit or audit. Although residency classes offer the best learning environment, Western Reformed Seminary offers interactive, synchronous classes for students unable to attend in person. as well as concentrated classes in January and May every year. For more information, visit wrs.edu or email registrar@wrs.edu. Western Reformed Seminary.